Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of today's Survival Show, helping you harness the power of choice to live the life that you want, not the life that other people want you to live, and not complying to what other people think you should do, but to live life on your own terms. That's what we are all about. We help make survival simple, not extreme, and help you strengthen your resolve. Thank you for tuning in. If you're a first-time listener to this show, welcome. I want to tell you that you have tuned in to a voice of reason in a chaotic world. And as I mentioned, we try to make survival simple and practical. Practical survivalism is what this is all about. And I'll tell you a little bit about what my thoughts are on practical survivalism. There's a segment of this show that I'm going to cover that. But welcome. Again, this is episode 24. It's Saturday, October 3rd. I'm getting a chance to record this show while I'm in my vehicle. I'm taking a drive, as I typically do on Saturday mornings. Not every Saturday, but quite a few Saturdays. I choose to go out and exercise my Second Amendment rights. So I am going to a shooting range to go shoot what is called an IDPA match. And if you've never had a chance to do that, it's where you get to go practice with your defensive handgun. I won't get into that too much because this is not going to be an episode about firearms. But anyway, while I'm driving, I'm going to take advantage of some windshield time here and talk about the best defense is a good offense. That's the title of this show. I think you saw that in the posting, and I'm going to explain to you what that means. And actually, that's one of the topics. The best defense is a good offense. I'm also going to talk about what's called a get-home bag, a little bit of a scaled-down version of a bug-out bag. And if you're new to becoming more self-sufficient, living a more secure life, I'll talk to you a little bit about what that means. And then I'm going to borrow something from another blogger in the survival community, Lisa Bedford over at The Survival Mom, who has been a sponsor of a couple of these shows. She put a good post on her blog yesterday, an awesome one, and so I asked if I could borrow it from her, and she said, fine, so I'm going to talk to you about Oblivion. Have you ever been to a place called Oblivion? I've been to Oblivion. Maybe you know some other people who have been to a place called Oblivion. It's the 51st state. And we'll talk a little bit about that, too. That's part of the subject matter. Before we get into all that, I do have just a couple of quick announcements. The forum. Let's talk about today's Survival Show forum. I want to put a call out again. Our forum grows every single day. And as a matter of fact, some people put a post up there this morning asking me to create a new category. I think we've got something like 200 topics on how to live a more secure life. If you have not become a member of our forum, todayssurvival.com/forum, or go to the main page, todayssurvival.com, and you'll see a link there where you can click forum, and that'll take you where you need to go. When like-minded individuals get together on an internet setting and they talk about how to live a better life, it is one of the most unique learning experiences that you will ever go through, folks. So take advantage of that. The other announcement that I'd like to make is that the listener count just continues to grow and grow. And I want to thank all of my international listeners. I want to thank all my listeners throughout the United States. And I also want to thank a lot of people who have been sending a lot of referrals into the forum. You're helping it grow. Spread the word. If you like what you hear today, let somebody know about it. One of the best things that we can do is to help others become more self-sufficient, because if you introduce them to ideas like this, you're going to better their life. You're going to help them become more independent and break free from the chaos and the ridiculous oppression that we have out there from our government. I really do think we have oppression from our government right now. And just the whole overall system that we're expected to live in today. It's just, I think it beats us down every chance that it gets. And that's kind of what I'm going to talk about when I get to the Oblivion section, because I've got some of my own thoughts on that. That was a great post by Lisa, and I'm going to go ahead and expand on that. So that's it for the announcements. Let's dive into the first topic, which is the best defense is a good offense. Now, I'm a football fan, and some of you might be football fans, you might not be. Ladies that are listening to this, just hang in there with me. I'm not going to start a long discussion here about football. But you've probably maybe heard that phrase. John Madden used to talk about that all the time on Monday Night Football. He used to say that the best defense is a good offense. And what he meant was, and for you international listeners out there, if you don't follow American football, when the football team has the ball and they're trying to score a touchdown, they're on offense. And therefore, the other team is on defense. Pretty simple, right? Well, Madden's philosophy used to be that the best defense is a good offense, which means if you can play offense real well, if you can move the ball down the field, and you can score points, you keep the other's team, the other team's offense off the field. They don't get a chance to score points while you're scoring points. And that was his philosophy. And how does that apply to survival? Well, I think when it comes to survivalism, a lot of people are playing defense. That's just my personal opinion. You may agree with it, you may not agree with it, but I think they're playing defense. I think they're thinking of all the possible scenarios that could happen to them. What are all the disasters that could happen to them? And they're thinking about, all right, how am I going to defend myself if XYZ happens? All right, what am I going to do if ABC happens? What am I going to do if this happens? What am I going to do if that happens? And that's okay. I'm not saying you shouldn't have plans. You should have plans, but let me suggest this to you. Why not go on offense a little bit more? Why not take a little bit more of a proactive approach so that while you're setting up your preparations, think about, all right, if something bad happens, how can I get real offensive towards this problem so that it doesn't spread, so it doesn't kick my butt, so it doesn't wipe out the neighborhood, and so on and so forth? How can I keep the disaster's offense off the field? In other words, how can I mitigate, how can I reduce the effect and the size and the scope of the disaster? And it does, I think, apply a little bit to football, or to the football analogy. Because the better prepared you are, the better you're able to handle it. And if you can shift gears, and instead of trying to head off whatever's coming your way at every turn, how about go on the offense and kick its butt? And that's kind of what I mean by the best defense is a good offense. Get aggressive. Get aggressive in your preparations so that you can be very aggressive if a disaster strikes. And I'll expand on that. If I haven't made sense yet, I will by the time this show's over. So whether it's methods of coping with a small emergency that crops up in life, or if it's a wilderness survival situation, or if you're preparing for a terrorist attack, I don't care, or if you're making plans for surviving a total society collapse, I don't think that's very likely, but if that's what you're preparing for, it doesn't matter. I think the philosophy of the best defense is a good offense still applies. You'll know if and when that time comes and you have to react. And if you're wise when that time comes, what I mean is that your defensive reaction is usually going to change into an offensive one. That just popped into my head right now. I guess that's kind of what I'm talking about. Your defensive action will change. So let me submit that you go on the offense right now. And you know, emergencies are not always going to be extreme, folks. if you thought that this show was going to be a lot about, you know, conspiracy theories and whacked out extreme scenarios, generally I don't talk too much about that. But what about stuff like this? What if you get hit with a large medical bill? Right? What if somebody in your family is injured, sick, you get hit with a large medical bill that you got to pay? That's an emergency, right? And that's common in today's society. Lord knows what's going to happen to us if our government's ridiculous health care bill passes. Sorry, folks, I'm not trying to be political. But man, the more I look at that, the more that thing stinks. What if your company files bankruptcy, lays off a bunch of people, and one of them is you, the primary income earner of your family? It may have already happened to some of you listening to this show. I hope not, but maybe it has. What if your home gets burglarized? What if your home burns down? What if you live in a part of the country where it snows a lot? You get caught in a blizzard while you're taking a trip. And what if you have to walk several miles to get help? What are you going to do? Are you ready for that? What if your car breaks down at night in a remote area? It's dark outside. What if drought hits your regional area like it did in South and Central Texas and creates water shortages and rationing? What if your teenage kid's out driving and gets in trouble? What if your teenage kid gets lost? Or what if their car breaks down? So get on the offensive now to learn what can happen in your area and sit down and make a list of what you think are the most common disasters. And folks, this show is about you. There are so many people that listen to this show from so many different parts of the world. It's impossible for me to know what could happen to you. You know it. But make a list. Go ahead and write them down. Go ahead and write down what you feel are the disasters that could happen to you and your family. Make a list and go on the offense to start getting ready for those right now. Don't wait until something happens and then play defense. Don't do that. And let's get back to football again. Just for a minute. Just bear with me for a minute. You've heard of the prevent defense, right? Well, guess what? It's terrible. It doesn't work. There's so many times it doesn't work. A team's ahead by 4 points. The other team has the ball. There's a minute to go. The other team has to score a touchdown to win the game. What is a prevent defense? The team playing defense, they sit way back and they let the offensive team have short yardage, 10 yards, 15 yards, 20 yards. And their goal is, we don't want the other team to score a touchdown. No matter what, they cannot score a touchdown, they cannot beat us. So they start giving the other team a little bit here and a little bit there and a little bit here and a little bit there. Before you know it, the team that has the ball, all of a sudden, they're on the 15-yard line, and it only takes one play from Brett Favre to throw that winning touchdown pass. Now, I hope he does not do that on Monday night against my beloved Green Bay Packers. All right, but I'm going to get off of football. But the prevent defense doesn't work, and it doesn't work in our lives and in the survival situations either. Don't wait for something to happen. Get on the offense right now. After you know what can happen in your area, prepare for it. Don't get too conservative. That's the key. Don't get too conservative with your preparations. Don't get extreme, but don't minimize it. There is a happy medium. And let's talk about one of those happy mediums right now. I want to talk about what I call a get-home bag. That's the next topic. What is a get-home bag? Well, for those of you who pay attention a lot to survivalism in modern-day survival, you've heard the term bug-out bags, and a lot of people, including myself, have what's called a bug-out bag packed. Bug-out bag means, in case somebody knocks on your door and says, hey, you've got to evacuate, we got a weather disaster coming through, for example, and you've got about 60 minutes to get out of your home, you should have a bag packed that will give you 3 to 5 days worth of sustainability in case it takes you that long to get to where you need to go. I hope you have a place to go. And if you don't, that's a subject for another show. But a get-home bag is a scaled-down version of a bug-out bag. And basically what that is if you're in your vehicle. Let's say your vehicle breaks down, you have some type of trouble while you're on a trip somewhere. You should have enough packed in your vehicle at all times to get you home. And that's why I call it a get-home bag. That's why a lot of people call it a GHB, a get-home bag. There should be enough in there to get you home so that you can regroup and use the resources that you have at your house. I've got one in the back of the vehicle right now as we speak. It's in here all the time, among other things inside of my vehicle. I think the need for a get-home bag is directly related to the distance between your house and your destination. So if you're going someplace that's only 10 miles away, you might not need as much in your get-home bag as if you're going someplace that's 150 miles away. But let's use 15 miles as kind of a reasonable estimate. Let's say you're going someplace that's 15 miles away. It's conceivable that if you're going someplace, you're 15, 20 miles from your house, something happens, and let's say you're out in a rural setting, and it's kind of tough to walk to a station somewhere to talk to somebody about getting help if your car breaks down or whatever kind of emergency you have. It's conceivable you might have to walk 10, 15 miles. Do you have some of the basic necessities in a small backpack, for example? It might take you a day to walk that 10 or 15 miles. It might take you 6, 7, 8 hours. I don't know. I don't know how good a shape you're in, how quickly you could walk. If it's nighttime, you're going to need some other tools at your disposal. But if you're going to go a long ways, like for me, I do a lot of traveling. I do a lot of driving around Texas and Oklahoma for my job. And sometimes I'm several hundred miles away from home. And if a disaster were to happen, and I need to get home to my family, and I need to find alternative ways of getting home, or let's say I can still drive home, but let's say there's some kind of a regional disaster, and a lot of the resources are not available. It's good for me to have resources in my bag, and I'm going to talk about what some of those are, to handle whatever might come my way while I'm trying to get home. And you know, as I talk about some of this stuff, I think it'll start to make a little bit more sense for you. Here's some suggestions that I have that you should have in your get-home bag. Now, a get-home bag can be just something as simple as a small backpack, a small duffel bag. I use an old shooting bag, an old range bag that has a lot of room in it. Keep 3 or 4 bottles of water in your get-home bag. You never know when you're going to need a few bottles of water and water's not readily available. Maybe you're not near a convenience store where you can run in there real quick and get some water. Keep some duct tape. You'd be amazed what you can do with duct tape. Well, one of the members on our forum said you can make a sling for your rifle out of duct tape. That's true. Have a good little multi-tool. Those multi-tools are so handy, and there could always be a need for decent tools if something happens to you when you're out on the road. Keep a change of clothes in your get-home bag. What if it's pouring rain and you got to walk quite a ways in the pouring rain? Might come in handy to have a good, nice, comfortable, dry change of clothes. Another thing you might want to consider for your GHB, a couple of large plastic garbage bags. The big black garbage bags. Have at least 2 of those. You can roll those up real tight. They don't take up hardly any room. You can make a poncho out of those. You can make a shelter. You can even use those as a sleeping bag if you had to stay overnight. For example, let's say you couldn't get home and maybe it's cold. You don't have a sleeping bag. You can use one of those big black plastic garbage bags. Always have a good knife. I've actually got 2 good knives in my get-home bag right now. Have a good LED flashlight. Spend some money, get a decent one. Don't go cheap. Don't get a $4 flashlight that doesn't hardly give off any light. Keep a good LED flashlight and lots of spare batteries. If you live in a firearms-friendly state, and you're like me, and you often carry a concealed weapon, have an extra box of ammo in your get-home bag. Never know when that might come in handy. Maybe two extra boxes of ammo. Have some food for 24 hours. Have some non-perishable food in there. It's also a good idea to rotate the food quite a bit in your get-home bag. So, you know, if you've got something that's been sitting in there for a couple of months, even though it says it's non-perishable, take it out, eat it as a snack, replace it with some fresher stuff. One of the things that I like is I like these little Millennium snack bars. I like to buy those and keep several of those little snack bars and a bunch of canned food and so forth in my get-home bag. What I like about those Millennium snack bars is they taste good. They've got a 5-year shelf life. I'll put a link in the show notes as to where you can get those. They're not very expensive, $1.50 or something like that a piece. And, you know, 400 calories. They're high energy. I think they're sold by Emergency Essentials at BePrepared.com. I'll put a link in there. But something like that. Have some food in there. Have a couple cans of food. Have something that you can that'll sustain you. You know, you're not going to be eating gourmet meals, but have enough food that'll sustain you for 24 hours. Another thing you might want to consider for your get-home bag are Ziploc bags. The 1 gallon and 5 gallon size. There's a member of our forum, and I'm going to put a link to his post in the show notes that, you know, has a lot of, he gives you a lot of good uses for a Ziploc bag. A rain cap is one of the uses. You can use that if it's pouring rain. You got your black garbage bag as your poncho. You can put a Ziploc bag over your head. Keep the rain off your head. Have good maps. Have good printed maps of the metropolitan area. Whatever metro area that you frequent, even if it's a small town. Folks, for those of you who are listening from small towns, always have a map of your area, a printed map. And even I would say probably go to Google and print an area, print a map of a 50-mile radius of where you live. Just in case your GPS isn't working. Have some real good gloves. It's amazing how many people don't have gloves in their vehicle at all time, and your get-home bag is a good place to keep those. Lighters. You might need to start a fire, and even before you get home, you may need to pull over, you may need to move into a remote area somewhere, and it's always good to have the ability to start a fire. Now, I like a product called Blast Matches. I'm going to put a link in today's show posting as to, I want you to see a YouTube video on blast matches. What I like about them, they're made by a company called Ultimate Survival Technologies, excuse me. It's an integrated flint striker. It's pretty cool. You can use it one-handed, and it was originally made for the Air Force, for their downed pilots, so they could easily start fires, no matter where they were. And it's pretty cool. You got to watch the video. It's hard for me to explain, but it's almost a foolproof fire starter. It's worth the money to invest in something like that. They don't wear out. You can start a fire with them in almost any condition. They don't take up much space. They're so much smaller than the palm of your hand. It wouldn't hurt to spend the money, have a blast match inside of each of your get-home bags so it's easy to start fires. Have some good rope. Have some extra toiletries. Don't forget an extra roll of toilet paper. And one of the things that gets overlooked a lot, don't forget a DC power inverter. If you don't know what a DC power inverter is, it's the device that you plug into the DC power source of your car, same place you plug in your cell phone charger. And it converts that DC power in your car over to AC, so that you can plug in AC powered devices. I've used that to run an air compressor, to pump up a low tire. And if you sit and think about what you could use that for, your car is a generator. Your car is not a really super powerful generator, but as long as you have gas in your vehicle and you can run your car, your alternator is like a generator. And you can get these DC power inverters that you can plug two or three different devices into at once. Those things come in real handy because not all the devices that you might have have the ability to plug directly into DC. They may only have an AC connection on it. So keep one of those. Those are a real handy device. Don't forget some good mosquito repellent. Extra cell phone batteries. Don't always assume the worst, folks. You know, a lot of hardcore survivalists are always assuming that there's never going to be any cell phone service if there's a disaster, or there won't be any internet service. That's possible, sure. There's a lot of scenarios that could knock out cell and internet service. But there's also a lot of times where that's still going to be available. And your cell phone's a fantastic tool. We're going to talk about some of that a little bit later in this show. So have some extra batteries if yours is the type of phone that where you can change batteries. Now, I have an Apple iPhone, so I can't change batteries very easily, but I've always got a cell phone charger in my vehicle, and I've always got one of those DC power inverters. What if somebody's with you and both of you want to charge your phone at the same time? So always have some extra batteries for that. Have a bottle of vitamins with you. Have some good multivitamins in there. Helps keep your energy level up. What if you're stranded for more than 24 hours? Always keep some aspirin. Small bottle of aspirin. Doesn't take up much room. Doesn't cost much. Aspirin can come in very, very handy, especially if you're in a stressful situation. Another thing that gets overlooked, always have a pen and paper in your get-home bag. What if you have to write down your name, your contact information, your phone number? What if you have to write down, give somebody, what if you have to give authorities the names and numbers of your family, and you need to write it down easily and give that to somebody? Something as simple as a pen and paper. How about some light sticks? I'll put a link in the show notes as to what light sticks are. Great tool to have in your get-home bag. Also, doesn't hurt to have some way of purifying water, like some water purification tablets. You may run out of water. Now, I always keep a case of water in my vehicle. I would suggest that you do the same. Always keep at least a case of bottled water in your vehicle, in your trunk. You can find the room for it, but if you don't, have some water purification tablets, so in case you find water and you're not sure if it's fit to drink, you can use some chlorine tablets, for example, to purify it. Another suggestion I might give you, a mosquito repellent, good thing to have in your get-home bag, binoculars, sunscreen, a small first aid kit, don't forget that, make sure that at least it consists of a few bandages, you know, some Neosporin, gauze, stuff like that, ankle wrap, anti-chafing sticks, iodine, alcohol, just some of the basics. Good sunglasses. Keep a hat in your vehicle. Always. Especially those of you who live in colder climates. Hats and gloves. It's a must. Even here in Texas, we can get some pretty cold winters. Or there can be some days. Excuse me, not cold winters, but there's days that can get pretty chilly, especially when ice storms hit. Hats and gloves. It's amazing. I know I'm talking about basic stuff, but you'd be shocked how many people do not have this stuff in their vehicle. They just don't think about it. They're in the state of oblivion, which we're going to talk about. And the last thing I want to talk about is always have an extra winter coat in your vehicle. Now, that might not be something you want to put in your get-home bag, but always have that. If you live in a cold climate, have that in your car as well. Again, just a few suggestions I wanted to give you to put in your get-home bag. It's a very basic bag full of things that can come in extremely handy and sure make your life a whole lot easier if you're traveling in your car and you're stranded, and you're in an emergency situation. At the very least, what's in your get-home bag might not even be used to get you home, but it might be used to keep you sustained until help arrives. And as a side note here, let me also suggest that whenever your gas tank in your vehicle gets below half a tank, fill it up. It's good practice to always keep your gas tank as full as you possibly can. With my Honda, I can get 200 miles on a half a tank of gas. So I know I've still got at least a couple hundred miles I can drive if I have to get somewhere in an emergency. So when it starts to get down to half, I look at that as, oh no, I've only got 200 miles. Let's fill this thing up. So I've got at least 400 miles to drive. You know, some people say, well, it's not a good idea to keep extra gas in a gas can in your car. So then if that's the case, if you feel that way, keep your tank as full as possible. So that's pretty much what I wanted to cover on the get home bag. I think you pretty much got the point on that. Let's move into the next topic. The state of oblivion. Like I mentioned, what a great post by Lisa from the Survival Mom. And you know, the way she puts this is excellent. You know, she says people are just walking around in denial, really. They're kind of in this state of oblivion, this bliss that, oh, well, you know, the government's going to be there to help, or there's really not any problems out there. Give me a break. The common nickname for people like that are ostriches that got their heads stuck in the sand. And she says, you know, just because something never has happened doesn't mean that it ever will. I want to expand on that. Did anybody think that the World Trade Centers would be bombed before 1993? In 93, that was the first time they were bombed. How many people before 93 would have thought that those two towers would come crumbling down someday? Not a lot. Not a large percentage. You know, the current state of economy, she says, that we're in right now, this is a man-made economic disaster. You know, but how many people really saw this coming? There were some. Yeah, there were some pretty smart people that saw this coming. But also, so a lot of people didn't think that it was going to hit to this degree. And there was not a really large percentage of people who knew this was coming. So just because something hasn't happened doesn't mean that it will. You know, she also talks about, you know, threats to our national security. Well, I mean, I could do two shows on that. Our national security threats are popping up all over the place. We didn't see 9/11 coming. And I don't care what you read about all these conspiracy, whacked out, stupid theories that 9/11 was an inside job. Get off of that. That's a crock. 9/11 wasn't an inside job. There was no inside United States conspiracy that wanted to blow up the World Trade Center and half the Pentagon. All right? But we were turning a blind eye. We didn't see that coming. And if we did see that coming, we chose to ignore it. But what I'm saying is, how many people in America, how many citizens were shocked by that event? Probably 98% of the population. So, and Lisa also writes, even the concept of homegrown terrorists, the Timothy McVeigh types of losers out there. You know, people aren't really thinking that that's out of the realm of possibility either, because that's already happened too many times. And I'll go ahead and I'll quote Lisa on her blog. She says, although oblivion might seem like a great place to reside, it's about as safe as swimming in shark-infested waters. Just because you don't see the sharks doesn't mean that they aren't there. So, you know, if this survivalism stuff is a little bit too extreme for you, if it's too fanatical, just take some baby steps. Put together the get-home bag that I've been talking about. Do things that are not quite so radical, but just, you know, start to go on offense a little bit. Go on offense a little bit and just start doing some of the practical. Do some of the practical stuff that doesn't make you look like an extremist. How about like paying off your debt? Paying off your debt doesn't make you look like an extremist, does it? Paying off your debt makes you look like a pretty darn smart person. And if you're the kind of person that you know, you're starting to think, well, okay, Bob's making some sense on this show here. But if you're still kind of one of those people that's worried about the stigma of being a survivalist, put together that little get-home bag, kind of hide it in your trunk. You know, put a blanket over it if you want. And if somebody asks you, hey, what's in that bag, just, you know, just tell them, oh, just a couple things to keep me better prepared in case I break down out there. I think most people are probably going to think you're a pretty smart person if you do that, not an extremist. But even these little basic things, we've got to start getting people to act. And if I've covered something today that you haven't done, go do it. Go put that in your bag. How about making a list of your 10 favorite meals that you like to eat? You and your spouse sit down, make a list of what you like to eat the most. And then go to the store and start buying a lot of what you eat and putting some of it away. Go do like I did, just start with a Rubbermaid container and get some of your favorite foods. Try to buy some stuff that keeps for a while. And just put it away. I can't think of any negative to have a little bit of extra food stored, even if you want to just set a goal of having a couple of extra weeks. Somebody help me figure out what's the negative of that. And the last thing I want to talk about for 5 minutes to conclude the show is, let's not forget about using modern technology and some technological devices that are out there that can help us. So many survivalists take the approach that they almost have an anti-technology approach. They think, oh, well, everything might be shut down. Yeah, maybe. Maybe. But is that really highly probable that we're not going to have any technology available to us? Personally, my opinion, you shoot me down if you want on my opinion. Feel free, jump on the forum, send me a comment on the blog. Tell me why you think it's highly possible that we're not going to have any technology available to us in an emergency. But, you know, don't forget, I did a whole show on this. I think it was back in episode 7. It was about half of my show anyway. I talked about ways to use technology. And somebody sent me an email and showed me a blog post about how you can use an iPhone. And there's several different applications you can download for your Apple iPhone or your Apple iPod Touch. Now, I have an iPhone. Let me tell you about some of these. For 99 cents, you can get an emergency preparedness checklist that you can keep on your phone. And it gives you a 59-point checklist that helps you prepare for any kind of an emergency. You can also get advice on the application on how to create an emergency plan. And you can also, it talks about what disaster supplies that you can't do without for 99 cents. If you have an Apple iPhone, if you have an Apple iPod Touch, download the emergency preparedness checklist. Even if you don't have cell phone service, folks, in a disaster, it just means you can't make a call, you can't get on the internet. But you can still use quite a few of your applications. There's an iSurvive Wilderness Report. If you're lost in the woods and you don't know what to do, you can download the application iSurvive Wilderness. It has information essential for surviving in the wilderness, how to tie certain knots, how to construct a shelter, how to set a snare. That stuff can come in real handy if you're in that situation. There's also a 99-cent app you can download called the Emergency Radio. And the description for the emergency radio is that it lets you locate nearby frequencies, and you can listen to police chatter, and it kind of keeps you up to date as to what's going on. You can access different emergency frequencies, so in case there is some kind of an emergency, you can access that. Here's something I really like. Another 99-cent app, there's a pocket first aid and CPR guide. Now see, this is something, again, this is an application you can use if internet's down, if cell phone service is down, but you've got to administer first aid. There's a pocket first aid guide that you can have on your iPhone. It's got videos on it, teaches you how to give first aid, teaches you how to, you know, create a medical profile, gives you some tips on performing CPR. If you're diabetic, there's a diabetes log. I think that was I looked at that last night. I think that was $1.99. But that app lets you track your glucose readings, your food intake, and medicine reports. Now think about that. Okay, if you're a diabetic and you're keeping track of your sugar readings, your food intake, your medicine logs, you're keeping track of that on the phone. If you're in an emergency and EMTs show up and you're a diabetic, all you got to do is open that application and show them the records of what you've been taking lately and what your levels have been lately. Don't you think that would be very helpful for paramedics to know that information? There's another application called the Pillbox. I think that was 99 cents. That helps you keep track of your family's medication list. Think about that in an emergency. You can also show medical authorities what you take and who's taking what and what dosages. These are the kinds of things that if you are in the situation where the authorities and you can get medical attention, it's real easy to produce the records and show people what you take in terms of medication. That's helpful information to know. One of the products that I sell, folks, is a personal emergency reporting system. And typically elderly and disabled people use the personal emergency reporting system. If they have an emergency at their house, they can push a button and they can speak to somebody at a monitoring center within less than 30 seconds. And they can tell someone what their emergency is so that the monitoring center can dispatch authorities. Fire, police, paramedics, EMT, whatever. And they can speak directly to the person to find out what the emergency is. Well, this is a survival tool as well. And what that does is it helps the paramedics and the EMTs to know what they're dealing with when they get to the scene. Simple applications just like these for your cell phones. And I would imagine that probably if you have a BlackBerry, there are some of these applications. BlackBerry's starting to keep up with iPhone. I'll bet you if you check it out, you're going to find some applications that you can put on your phone. The more information that you can give to first responders in an emergency, my opinion is, the better off you're going to be. So I will put a list of all of the applications. If you have an iPhone, you're interested in downloading some of these, I'll put a list of all of them that you can get. And of course, you can go over to iTunes and you can download those. And speaking of iTunes, since we're on that subject, in case you didn't know it, today's survival show is on iTunes. So for those of you that like to use that, all you have to do is go, you can search today's survival show and then click the subscribe button and download the shows that way. So I think I'm going to bring today's show to a close. I want to say this. Don't walk around in a state of oblivion. Please, just start to do some of the basic things to get you prepared. Trust me, the peace of mind that you will have from just getting started with some of the basics is incredible. And this does get addicting, folks. Once you start to do a few things that give you some peace of mind, then you want to do more, and then you want to do more, and you'll start asking yourself, well, gee, what else could happen? What else do I need to go on offense and prepare for? And by doing these simple things, folks, you set yourself up for greater independence. Peace of mind is what you set yourself up for. Preparation equals peace of mind. Peace of mind equals confidence. And confidence equals action. And that's what I call the confidence factor. If you prepare, you have peace of mind. If you have peace of mind, you have more confidence to know that you can handle what comes your way. And if you have more confidence, you are going to be able to spring into action. And again, folks, don't forget, disasters don't have to be extreme. But here's the problem, is even if it's not an extreme disaster, it can have extreme consequences if you're not ready for it. So thank you for tuning in to episode 24. This is Bob Main. You've just listened to another episode of today's survival show. Thank you for listening, where we help you harness the power of choice to live the life that you want to live it on your own terms and strengthen your resolve. We make survival practical and simple, not extreme. Thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.